Hello, gorgeous, gorgeous girls, and welcome back to another episode of Girlfriends. I'm Lindsay, and today I'm joined by my favourite pink-haired girl, Sophie.
Hello. She's looking a bit tired today. We definitely need a refresh on the old pink hair. But yes, hello. I'm so excited to be on. It feels really weird to not be on talking about Dragula.
I know, right?
But we're here and I'm so excited to check into the Abaddon.
So, if you don't, I mean, if you've not got that reference, today we're talking about Hell House LLC, which is extra exciting because I did say last episode, but I might have been like over-egging the pudding a bit, but I said this is Sophie's favourite film. Is that
It's
right?
definitely up there. I think it's definitely my favorite found footage film. Yeah, anytime I see anything to do with Hell House, like on like other podcasts, on like YouTube videos, I am like, I'm in there. I must have watched, I can't even tell you how many times I've watched it, like the whole, well, it's a quadrilogy now. Yeah, I just love the absolute bones of it.
Yeah, like this is the kind of found footage film that I'm like, oh, I get why people love this genre so much. Like, it doesn't bring anything new, but like what it does exceptionally well. So, I was filling in the notes when I was waiting for the last episode to like convert, and I saw all the ratings, which we'll get on to later in the episode. So I was like, oh, like my expectations are quite high now, because it's rated really well, which I wasn't expecting because like people just tend to fucking hate found footage films, but I was like pleasantly surprised by this. I was literally there was parts when I was literally screaming. I was like, and I don't do that. Horror films, like in general.
No.
So, yeah, it really got me.
This is like, I think one of the reasons I really love this so much is because it's one of the first films in it. Like, it must have been a good few years ago when I watched it now, but I think I was scrolling through Shudder, like just being like, oh, what can I watch? What can I watch? And it came up and I was like, oh, found footage. Like, sounds a bit creepy, cool. Putting it on, not expecting to be like blown away. And honestly, and I'm sorry, because obviously this is a podcast and you can't see, but I spent most of the time like this, like holding my hands up to my face, not wanting to like to look. I had to turn the big light on at one point. Like, I was frightened. Like, it was one of the first films in a long, long time where, like, because I, we're probably the same. I've been watching horror since I was like 6, 7 years old. Like, there's not a lot that can shock me now. But I was frightened with a capital F. Like, and I think that's what like I love so much about horror. Like, it is just when you do get scared, and it's such like an adrenaline rush, and to have that, by something like found footage where like everyone and their mom's done it by now. It was just so exciting.
It is like I don't know if exciting is the word I would use, but there is something in this, like the story like unfurls really naturally, and it really keeps you engaged, whereas like I'm so bad, like maybe it's like undiagnosed ADHD or something, but like for grabbing my phone and having a check, and I don't know, I just need to be doing something with my hands a lot. Which is something I don't find it in the cinema, but when I'm at home, I'm very like, oh, pause it, make a cup of tea. Like, oh, need to do this, need to do that, and like it can be hard for me to just like stay sat. But for this, I was like, lay down with the big light on, which I'm glad because if I had it off, I think it would have been even more frightened. And I was just really engaged, and I have so many questions about it as well. And I did kind of intend to try and watch the full like four films this weekend, but as me and Sophie were saying off air, I've spent most of this weekend sleeping, so I'm gonna try and like fire out two and three after recording at least. But yeah, like pleasantly fucking surprised, and I watched it like 2 days on the bounce as well. Like I watched it last night and I watched it again today, just because there are like I had so many questions afterwards. I was like, Oh, I wonder if those questions were actually answered and I missed something. They were. I'm gonna have to watch 2 and 3 probably to get those questions answered.
Yeah, it's definitely one of them where it's even if the, like you can tell they were kind of setting up for at least a sequel. Like there's, I think, a lot of things that don't get kind of touched on in this film, and it is intriguing, but it's also frustrating a little bit at the same time because you're like, if I'm just coming to it as like, I just want to sit down and like so I've shown this film like family to friends because it's like, oh, especially like on Halloween, like, oh, watch. I'm like, you want to be fucking frightened? I'll show you this. They're probably not gonna go away and watch the whole trilogy to answer some of those questions. So I think if you are like, there is bits that are missing in this film. But I think the other two films aren't maybe as popular, but I still really like them. I think they're really great. But yeah, it definitely kind of rounds things out in those other films.
Yeah, I
So
did see that 2 and 3
yeah.
definitely don't rate quite as highly, but 4
Oh my
I
God, I
feel
loved four.
is meant to be on par with Hell House LLC.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely excited to get more into it. Like I said, I did really want to watch them all before recording, but I didn't have time. I picked sleep, I'm sorry.
Self-care, girly.
Okay, so let's get into Hell House LLC properly. So the IMDb plot is as follows. 5 years after an unexpected malfunction causes the death of 15 tour goers and staff on the opening night of a Halloween haunted house tour, a documentary crew travels back to the scene of the tragedy to find out what really happened. This film came out in 2015, stars Gore Adams, Alice Balke, and Danny Bellini, and was directed by Stephen Cognetti, who worked on all of the other Hell House LLC films, and he wrote them all as well. But he also has something coming out not Hell House LLC related, I believe. I might get corrected, but he's working on a film called 825 Forest Road. Which sounds quite interesting. And like I am interested to see what he's gonna do outside of the Hell House franchise. Because this has been him since like 2015 to 2023. He's made Hell House LLC films. So I'll be interested to see what happens with that.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be front row in the pictures to see that.
I'm sad. So one of my favorite things about this film is actually like the documentary style of it, and I did find myself getting a bit swept up in it at one point. There's a part later on where it talks about one of the actors taking their own life, and I've sat there, oh, that's so sad. And then I had to give myself a shake and be like, Lindsay, it's not real. It's not real.
I think like what makes it work so well for me is like how immersive it is. Like we have all seen, videos of like, oh, video from haunted house. Like every single year there's all, like what is it, that McCamey Manor that just looks like hell on actual earth, where like people are like, you're not allowed to film in there, people have to send NDAs, da, da, da. But like there's all the YouTube channels that are like, oh, sneakily filming in McCamey Manor, la, la, la. And I just think it's from like the YouTube videos to the news reports to the documentary, like that is something that I would sit down to watch on Netflix, like first day it's come out, and be like, oh my God, going to the office the next day. Did you watch that? Like, can you believe it? Oh my God, like that's the best thing I've ever seen. And I think that's what, like you say, it really pulls you in because it feels real, like it's relatable. It's something we would all do.
Yeah, for sure. I got that like Netflix documentary feel as well. Like we are like quite morbid as people, and we do love to watch these documentaries about things that should have gone well go horrifically wrong. Like I was thinking about, was it Fire Festival?
Oh,
Like
yeah.
we were all sat for the documentary about that absolute clusterfuck. And again, like we love to watch things about disasters, about death, about morbidity. Like the amount of like serial killer documentary. Like there's not just one documentary per serial killer. It's like we need to continue to deep dive into these things all the time
Yeah,
because
new
it just,
angle.
yeah, there's just something about it that just, I don't know, hits for humans. I don't know why. I do not know why. But yeah, the documentary follows the Hill House LLC team as they go to Abaddon in Abaddon, rather, in New York. And they previously had a haunted house set up in Queens, and they've been doing this whole haunted house shtick for a really long time. So they're like really well versed on how to set it up, like what works, what doesn't. Alex is like the head of the company, and he runs it with his bestie McNamara, and his girlfriend Sarah, and Tony and Paul work for them. And they've been doing this for like 4 or 5 years. So this is the first time they've taken it out of New York, which I do think is interesting. There is the whole trope in horror, or just kind of using like small towns as a setting, as a means of like isolation, to show like the themes of isolation. So I think it's interesting that they take these like people from New York City, you know, one of the busiest, bustling cities in the world. It's a 24-hour, like 24/7 place, and they take them out of there and bring them to this small town. And at one point they're moaning about how, like in Queens, if you didn't like it or if you needed a breather, you could just like pop out and get pizza. You can't do that in Abaddon. Or Abaddon. Why do I keep calling it Abaddon? Abaddon.
Because it's a bad place.
So yeah, it's interesting that they set it in this small town as well with these big city people.
Yeah, it's like it's so out in the sticks, isn't it? Like I think that one of the opening shots is like them driving to it. It just the whole like hotel as it is just looks. It looks like one of them really creepy, like rundown places. Like it's perfect for a haunted house. Like you could just walk in and set it up as is. Yeah, it's definitely you're definitely not in the, you know, busy kind of New York anymore. It's where it's people are going to be coming to you. It's like this whole event that they're putting on. Like I would imagine in New York, like these kinds of things are like dime a dozen. Whereas this in this small town, it's like this is the thing to come to. Like talk about pressure on yourselves. Oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of pressure for it to go well because I think they are expecting a lot of people from New York City to make the drive out there. So, yeah, it is a lot of pressure to make sure it goes well. And I think, yeah, well, someone in the car immediately says, like, how creepy the location is, like, oh, this road is so creepy and stuff like that, and it's so weird. So these like bits of like found footage are interspersed with Diane Graves and her documentary and footage from YouTube from other tour goers and such like who are videoing what like the outside of the Abaddon Hotel. And what happened, all the bodies coming out, everybody screaming, all of the confusion. And again, like you said before, it's immediately immersive because it felt so real. Like this is actually a disaster that has happened. And I kind of had to keep telling myself for the first half of the film, like later on when it goes more into found footage, like it's a bit easier. But this part, I kind of had to keep telling myself, like, this is not actually a documentary.
Yeah, it's it feels really real. I think with the like the 911 calls that you know that I think there was like a, one of the people she's interviewing like a photographer is like oh I went round afterwards. There's no fucking way I'm going in that basement. Like all the pictures that were taken, you're like shit. Like did this actually happen? Like we've just not seen it anywhere. It feels really real. Like it's a really like I said before like really well-rounded piece of like. Documentary filming and like if you were watching this like if we were like sat down to watch this thing that happened about an event that went wrong like you would be looking for like all of the stuff, like everything they could find. Like, you'd want that YouTube video, you'd want to speak to the people who were there, you'd be like, it's given us as a viewer like everything we need to kind of see like just what happened. And I think it really helps to kind of like get a proper feel for like what the house looked like, what it was like running up to it, what happened on that night. Like, it really tees you up, I think, to give you already that sense of like, shit, like something really terrible happened here.
Yeah. And we're told in this early stage that the official explanation is a gas leak. But from what little snippets of information that have got out, like, I think there's an account where one of the Hell House LLC team has a self-inflicted throat slit, and it's like, that's not from a gas leak, is it? So these things raise a lot more questions than there are answers. It's also mentioned as well that like a lot of people have gag orders to not talk about anything, and there's also very little footage from outside of like tour goers. There's very little footage from inside, so the whole thing is just like a big mystery. So Diane Graves, who's giving like big Gail Weathers energy, has managed to track down the one surviving member of the Hell House staff, Sarah Havel. And you know, the guy behind the camera is just like, oh, I don't know if this is legit, like very skeptical about it. Whereas Diane is just like, let's just give it a chance, let's just see what she says. And you know, there's a bit of back and forth about how she's doing. You know, she says she's in a better place now, big hints for later. And she provides Diane with all of the footage. And she's like, where did you get this from? And she's like, I just hid it from everyone. And then we get really more into the tapes and what has happened what happened over 5 years ago. So we get introduced to everyone, and there's one weird trope with found footage that I really need to get to the bottom of. And why does the person holding the camera have to be really fucking annoying? I'm being fucking serious. Like,
we've got a problem.
Paul's the worst. Like, he's the worst.
Paul is the ultimate creepy little fuckboy. Like, in no like universe, even if, you know, Hell House never happened, nobody died, you would still not want to work with Paul. Like, if you were coming into work and you were like, oh, Paul's here, Paul's gonna help us set up, you'd be like, fucking hell.
Paul is helping too late? Is no help whatsoever.
No.
And there's just something like really fucking creepy and weird that he says later, because obviously it's one of his whole, don't we all? And it's like, oh, Sarah's locked in with Alex, you know, her long-term boyfriend. And it's like, were you just expecting that the four boys would play pass the fucking parcel with Sarah or something? Like, what? Like, I don't even know why that came in his head to fucking say. Like, it was so gross, rapey, honestly, just inappropriate. No, like, it was just...
And he says later as well, like, when they get, like, the scare actors and say, oh, I hope one of them's, like, boneable or something. And it's like, who is saying boneable, first of all? Gross. But, like, just stop thinking with your penis for 10 seconds. Like, do your job.
Exactly. Exactly. Jesus fucking Christ. Like, I was going to say, oh, Tinder would have been a thing. I don't know if it would have been. But it's just like, surely if you went to the local pub and just like chatted someone up, it would, because he's like a good looking boy. Like,
I'm a filmmaker.
I'm here making films. Like, oh. People lap that shit up. You don't have to be such a dickhead.
Mm.
So They all get to the Abaddon Hotel. It takes about a week to set up their electrics, but then after that, they like live there while they're getting it set up. And they have like a really tight timeline, honestly. I think they only give themselves like 2 months. So they're all clearly like very talented people to get all the, you know, the set to design, the electrics, like all the special effects, hiring actors and all the rest of it. Like, it's a massive, massive job that they undertake. So it's not until they start to live there that like a few little weird things happen. I can't remember which one of it that it them it is, but someone's like setting up like a hanged person that we see on camera, that the doors are opening, the hanged person is like flapping around, and there's like a person just clean like walks past the camera. And you're like, okay. And at this point, we're not really led to believe that anything spooky has happened here. It's just an abandoned hotel that they've decided to like buy or rent or whatever for spooky purposes. Yeah, what do you think of these like early parts of the journey to get Hill House set up?
Well, if you miss any scary bits, anyone walking past, don't worry because Diane Graves will freeze frame it, rewind it, and replay it and be like, "Did you see that? Did you fucking see that? Isn't that really scary?" I just like they're braver than me because, you know, haunted or not, I would not be staying there. I would be like, I'll stay at the hotel next door. I'll come into work, crack the dawn every morning, but I'm not fucking sleeping here. Like, how long's that been abandoned for? Like, it must be stinking. Do the toilets even work properly?
Oh
Who
yeah,
knows?
is the water even on?
Yeah,
Like,
look, no thanks. But I think this is a really nice part of the film because you get to see, like, you know, creepy Paul aside, you get to see like how tight everyone is. Like, there's a lot of reminiscing about like previous haunts, you know, the work that they're going to be putting into it. All of these like mad decorations. I think I remember reading somewhere like the Abaddon Hotel in real life is used as like a haunt every year, and the person who set up that like does all of the like set decorations for the haunts like actually was part of this film and like did all the set decorations, which I thought was really cool because it looks like somewhere you would go pay to go to. And I really like this part of the film because you're already in that mindset of like, when shit's gonna start popping off soon, like, how do we get from this lovely, like, oh, we're all like, you know, working on this, we've got 2 months to do it, to like, there's 15 people dead. Like, even though there's not a lot of stuff happening, it's enough to kind of get you drawn in and be like, okay, I feel like I've got to look in like every single corner and be like, what was that? Who's there? What's going on? Where's the gas leak gonna come from? Who's gonna go mental? Like, is it Alex or someone who's gonna like pick up the axe and kill everyone? Like, what is happening?
Yeah, because at the point where like the spooky person walks past, I like time checked it and I was like, right, that's the kind of first scary thing that's happened. And it was at 28 minutes, and the film is like 1 hour and 28 minutes. Oh, no, it's not, it's 1 hour and 37 minutes. I watched the director's cut, so like there's still about like 1 hour and 5, 1 hour and 10 left of the film, and I feel like in that hour they pack so much in. Oh
We
my
go on
God.
a journey.
So much happens. And like, I know we're not there yet, but even towards the end, like when I was doing my rewatch before this, I like time checked. I was like, fucking hell, there's still another 20 minutes. Like they pack a lot into this. And yeah, it is nice to see like how close they all are. They've clearly been doing this for a really long time. And yeah, it's sad how it ends up for them, but we'll get there when we get there. So like weird things happens to like each person, with the exception of Alex for some bizarre reason. Of course, it can't happen to him because he's the one, with the mission.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of like so many films where like something dodgy is happening, and it's almost the dad that's like, "Something's happening." I'm like, yeah, to you.
He's the gaslighting husband that's like, "Oh, honey, I think we should up your meds. Like, what's no, this is not okay." And it's like, this woman's being terrorized nightly.
Yeah. Exactly. There's a lot of things that happen to Paul, and like the first one, it's like it freaks me out so much, where he's just like lying in his room and he's like, "Oh, you're being fucking weird," and he's like, he never questions the next day or anything. Like, "Hey, which one of you was like standing at my bedroom in the dark? Like, this could have like we could have got this like cleared up like a lot earlier than what we do." But by the time they kind of know, "Oh, there's something really dodgy going on here," there's so much time and money and stuff invested that they just end up arguing with each other. Whereas he could have been like, "Hey, which one of you was standing at my room?" They all say no one. He shows them the footage, and then they could just be like, "We're getting the fuck out of here."
We'll pick
But
somewhere
that
else.
that conversation never happens. It's like I feel like we could have just cleared this all up
Yeah.
there, but it just gets so much worse.
Feel like he's definitely been singled out. They're like, "Oh, you're a creepy little guy. We'll show you our creepy little guys."
Exactly. Yeah, so as part of the like the set design for Hell House, there are these like creepy clowns. But none of their heads move for some weird reason. They're just meant to be like dressed up mannequins, and they're all really creepy looking, and they're trying to decide like what to do with them. And like so many times on camera, they're caught moving their heads. It's just like, how the fuck does that happen?
I think like we get it just gets chucked at you a lot, doesn't it? Like when you first get there, it's like, "Oh yeah, there's these clowns that they were here when we got here. They're just mannequins, they can't move, like we get to put them in place," kind of thing. And you just know, you're like, this is okay, so when's the head gonna move then? Like
Yeah.
when are we gonna see these walking around? That fucking black and white one like haunts my dreams. Like what a scary motherfucker that like that black and white clown is. I hate it with every single fiber of my being.
The black and white one in particular just like shows up in really like random places. The bit where like Paul's just like filming on his own and it's like there and then his head moves.
Ugh.
And that like when he pulls the camera, he pulls it back, his head's moved. And then he's like, "Haha, very funny, like Tony." And then he goes away and sees Tony with Mac and Alex and just completely freaks out. And then it's not even stood there. And it's when they're like going through the footage and you just see all their like raw reactions to this super creepy footage. And it's just like, again, why did you not think something went wrong there? But they just think Paul is like this little jokester. Like, oh, it's just you pulling this prank, you silly Billy. It's like stop being stupid, and then they just carry on. And it's like if it had been any of the other ones, like would they have taken it more seriously?
Yeah, I think like that's the trouble, isn't it? It's like boy who cried wolf. Like he's clearly set himself up so many times as being like someone who does take the piss. Then this clearly horrible, terrifying thing happens, and you just don't get believed. Like it's like, oh, this is something you would do. Like you're just taking the piss. Like all this, that, and the other. Like regardless of like how much money was riding it or on it or anything, if I was Paul, I would like being, having a little mooch around, getting in all the things. I saw that clown clearly move, like you push it, there's nothing happening, and then you see everyone else in the same room. I'd have been like, you know what? Great, I'll be paid up until today. See you later. I'll see you
Yeah.
afterwards. Like, I'm not fucking staying here. There's some shenanigans afoot. Absolutely not.
It's the bit again with this black and white clown. Again, as well, Paul sleeps right next to the basement, which seems to be like the creepiest part of this whole place. And Max woken up as well, and the clowns just stood at the bottom of the stairs. And Max like, it's fucking fine. Look. And then he hits it on the head and like shuggles it. And the way it's shaken, I'm like, that's a person. That's a person. Like, that's not some like solid thing. Like, that's a person. The way it's shaking is like a human. And it really freaked me out. And I don't know how he couldn't see that. And I just, as well, like, how do you not know that that's a person in there?
Yeah. It's just, I think, clowns are scary anyway. I've never been someone who's like, I'm absolutely terrified of clowns or whatever, but I think there's something about these particular clowns, like with their makeup, it's like it's sinister looking. Like a lot of clowns will have like obviously their like features are quite rounded, like the mouth is rounded, the eyes are that those like rounded shapes, so it looks kind of open and friendly. This is, I think, with these makeups, it's a bit like, have you ever seen John Wayne Gacy's clown makeup as well? It's very like spiked, like at the end it comes to like really sharp points, like it just looks horrendous. And this is the same, like obviously, I mean, he's got blood kind of coming out of his eyes and stuff. This is not a friendly looking clown at all. Like, I don't want to see that just stood still, moving the head, whatever. I don't want to see anything to do with that. I certainly don't want to see it in the fucking dark when I've got up in the middle of the night to go for a wee. Like, no, we are leaving.
Exactly. So at one point they all hire actors who are going to perform as part of the tour. So we meet Joey, Melissa, and Sam. And I think one kind of like down point I have about this is like, what's the point in introducing Sam if we don't get to know anything about her? Like, it's really weird. Like, I didn't even know that she was going to be like the hostess until the point that she's hostessing.
Yeah.
So I one small down point. So we meet Joey and Melissa, who are quite important to the story. And Joey is going to be a clown in the basement, and Melissa is going to be this like damsel in distress, tied up, at the bottom. And Joey's kind of like a bit of muscle to make sure that like nobody's being fucking weird with Melissa, because she's just going to be hanging there in her underwear, basically. We find out about Joey's fate early on, not too long after we're introduced to the actors. We find out through like title cards that Joey like likes it out of the basement, like holds himself up, doesn't speak to anybody for like what, 9 days, and then it takes his own life. And again, I got so into the documentary style, I was like, oh, so sad. I have to remind myself that Joey does not actually exist, but it is really fucking sad. And I
Yeah, it
feel
is
like
sad.
when you see him in the film, he's so like cheery. He's like, he's ready to have some fucking fun with this, and whatever he sees down there like completely like breaks him mentally. And then he ends up taking his own life, and it's really fucking sad.
Yeah, I think like that kind of when you first see them, it's like that zoom in from the camera of like them all chatting outside, and it's just then it's like that freeze frame of like Joey never talked to anyone and he was found dead like 9 days after, and you're like, what the fuck happened? Like, how are we from here to that? Like, and it just like it's that like thing, you know, that meme of the guy kind of leaned back in the chair and then he like comes forward to be like, what have we got here? Like, that is how I felt. Like, I was like, I'm sad.
Yeah. And then we also see Alex talking to Melissa, just kind of like chatting through the particulars of the job. And then, of course, fucking Paul's there being annoying with the camera. And then they start to get like a little bit into the history of the Abaddon Hotel. And Melissa's like, oh, I don't know a huge amount about it, and gives like kind of like vague details and says something about some people going missing, but she doesn't know if they were ever found. And something about the former owner of the hotel hanging themselves, so dying in the exact same manner which Joey did. And then we cut to one of the experts. I can't remember. Excuse me. I can't remember what his name was, or even like what his job title was. But he seems to be like somewhat well versed in what's happened, and he talks about how the hotel was formerly owned by a man named Andrew Tully, and Andrew Tully was kind of like interest piqued about the idea that Abaddon was also the name of someone who guided people to hell, or like a demon or something like that. And he like was kind of obsessed with the idea of having a hotel in this place that was like related to hell and Satanism. So he built this hotel, and immediately like people started going missing. And the first case was an 11-year-old girl and her mother. And the police were involved, but Andrew Tully was able to just like write this off. Like he had evidence that they'd moved on. And, you know, the police didn't have any reason to suspect anything like else had happened. So that was that. And then not too long after, Andrew Tully hanged himself. And that was 20 years before the events of this film. So we have these little inklings that something kind of satanic is going on. In this same conversation, Melissa brings up the drawings in the basement, and Paul's like, no, they're OG, baby. Like they were here when we got here. So you can kind of start to put the pieces together and be like, I think Andrew Tully was trying to, I don't know, create some kind of like satanic portal or something to do with like satanic cults, but it's gone wrong for him somewhere, and it's probably the cause of all the weird things that are happening in the Abaddon Hotel right now.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting in this bit is like she's kind of saying all this stuff, and everyone's like, "What? We didn't know that." And Alex is like, "Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up." And
Yeah.
it's like, "Alex, you shady little bitch. Like, what do you know? Did you already know all of this stuff and just failed to tell us this information?" Like, I think it's what gets quite a lot of insight into Alex's character in this little bit. And it's kind of like, obviously, it's like that big exposition-y, like, this is the background of the hotel. But I think in terms of like his role in their conversation, it's quite like throwaway, where it's like you might not have necessarily like picked up on it the first time you're watching it, just because of all the crazy shit with Andrew Tully and things. But yeah, Alex is a shady little character.
Absolutely. And it's like later on when the concerns are raised, he's just like, no, I'm a businessman. And he's just like, all he's thinking about is money, money, money this whole time, even when there's concerns raised that this might hurt someday or there's something fucking weird going on. He just doesn't care. But yeah. Definitely in this scene, you have to wonder, does he know more than he's letting on? Because he's just told all his friends, like, yeah, it's just a hotel.
Just
Yeah,
abandoned, just
it's
found
just
it one day.
abandoned. So there's like a few more like spooky things that happen. There is an incident where the boys find Sarah just like talking in tongues, like face against the wall. I think that's happening at the same time as the black and white clown,
Yeah.
where they're trying to find it. So she's like talking in tongues. They think she's maybe sleepwalking, and they're trying to like bring her out of it. Mac has this whole thing. Is it Mac or is it Tony? I can't remember with the piano. I think it's Mac.
Yeah, where they like create that like creepy little like dun dun dun. Yeah.
Yeah, so the piano was being played like in the middle of the night, and Max trying to find out what's going on. And again, it just appears to be one of the mannequins sitting there, but when he turns his back again, it starts playing. So it's like there's definitely something like super creepy happening. Yeah, and then when the house is kind of set up ready for a test run, Tony and Paul like get ready to test it out, and Paul's wearing like a GoPro thing on his chest or something so that Tony can see afterwards like what's happened. And as soon as the lights go out and the strobe lights come on, there are way more like creepies in there than what they had set up. And that was like, when I first watched, it was really hard to catch them because it's like strobe, and I was like, I didn't really know what I was looking for. And then you see on the stills like all the things that like are there now that weren't there before. But on a second watch, like you can see them clear as day, and it's fucking
Yeah.
terrifying.
I can tell you, I would do exactly the same thing that Paul did. I would have come out of that room and vomited everywhere. That was, do you know that was real? Like he, it
Yeah.
wasn't in the script. Like, yes, absolutely. That is exactly what I would have done. Like, just seeing that thing come towards you and like not be able to get out or whatever. And like, think with the additions of the strobes, like, oh God, yeah. I think that I feel like from kind of the first kind of interaction with a clown we have, that it feels like there's no let up. Like it's just like scare to scare to scare to scare. Like you've barely got a minute to breathe. It's just like, if this is happening now before opening night, like what the hell is opening night gonna be like? Like we are coming to some sort of horrendous conclusion here.
Exactly. And I think that after this is when they have like a bit of a confrontation with Alex, and you know, concerns are raised about safety and like where they are and like if they should be doing this in the first place. And Alex is like very dismissive. He just thinks everyone's being fucking sensitive or something. And like Paul walks off, and after this is like, I think the absolute scariest part. I was like fucking screaming. when Paul's in bed again and he like turns his like camera on for a light, and you just see this creepy fucking girl in the background. And I was just like, ah! And he's got no idea. And he's like, you know, when you wake up and your mouth feels all weird, and he's just like having a bit of a stretch or whatever. And then he turns over and sees her sitting there, and he's like
It's
piercing like
awful.
white blue eyes. And it's just the way as well, like he's so scared that all he can think to do is like hide under his duvet. And
Relatable queen.
and part of me is kind of like, would you run out? But then it's like she's right next to the door. Like, what's the point? And it's when he like kicks out, and she's just getting closer and closer. And like my toes are just like curling under, even thinking about it. And then there's just a lot of screaming, and there's like a white light, and like that's it. And you kind of like you don't know if you there's gonna be a corpse. You don't know if he's gonna disappear. You like you don't know what's going to happen.
It's one of the scariest things that I've seen, because it is like we all do that. Like you wake up in the middle of the night, you see the chair with all of the clothes on that you think like there's an intruder in my room, there's a monster in my room. I'm just gonna go under the covers and it'll all go away. And it like I think this is what I mean again, like with that like relatable stuff. Like we've all done that. We've all been shit scared in the middle of the night and thinking, well, I can't run out of my room because they're blocking the door. It's oh yeah, like it was. I think that was the point that I put the big light on when I was watching it for the first time. I was like, I can't do this. I need to pause and have a break and just catch my breath.
Yeah, I don't bloody blame you, because like I don't get like that watching these films. Like I would be like, oh, jump scare, and I'm over it, but oh, that was just something else.
It's when you know it's scary, like you know, like. Again, like when you get up to go to the toilet in the middle of the night or you go get a glass of water, and that's the thing that comes into your head. And you're like, why is my brain doing this to me?
Oh God, I hope that doesn't happen to me now.
No, and you've got to run all the way back to your bedroom and then get under the quilt.
So they all get up in the morning and Paul's nowhere to be seen. And one of them's like, oh, Paul's done this before, like he disappeared for 2 days when it was Queen's, but they'll turn back up. And I think like Tony's kind of like backing him up, like being like he wouldn't just like disappear. Like he set up every single one of these cameras, like he's invested in this just as much as the rest of us. Like he's not gonna just like fucking disappear. But Alex isn't having any of it. He's like proper slagging Paul off. And then he like fucks off. And then Tony is like, fuck this, I'm out here. Like he is a big fat prick. Like I don't want to work with him anymore. And Max like, I've got something I need to tell you. Like there's a reason why all this is happening. And you're like, right, what's the fucking reason? Camera cuts off, they're sitting in a field. And Tony's like, oh, well, I guess I have to stay then. Oh, what the fucking happened? You can't tell me there's like major tea and then not tell me the fucking tea. What were they talking about? Does it get revealed in the later films?
Yeah, it does. It does,
Okay,
yeah.
good.
But this is what I mean. Like, this is when it's frustrating because, you know, like, you, that first reason, you're like, that meme where it's like, what was the reason? It's just like, okay, so Alex is clued in. Clearly, Max clued in. I think, like, Max seems to be just a bit done with, like, the whole thing. Like, his friendship with Alex, like, the whole thing, like, he's just done. He's like, I've just got to get through this. But yeah, you don't find out in this film, which is really fucking annoying. You do find out in later ones. But like I said before, like if you're just coming into this as like a one and done, I don't know there's any sequels, I don't know there's this, that, and the other. I'm just coming here, have like a good scary time. You probably will be like, okay, right, cool.
Sometimes
That's
I
really nice of you to
do,
keep that secret.
yeah. Sometimes I do like that there's like unanswered questions sometimes because I was like, my head was running away with me. It's like, is it that like Alex knew the whole time that this is like what like he knew about the satanic cult and all the rest of it? Is he related to Andrew Tully or is it something like Alex is dying and he wanted one last hurrah because like Max the only one that knows. Because Sarah doesn't even know what it is, and she's like long-term girlfriend. So it's like all these things. I'm like, oh, is he dying? And he wants like one big last hurrah, like to end it all. Like, is he related to Andrew Tully? And he needed to find out more about the Abaddon, and like what it was he was doing there, or like did he just know about the Abaddon in general and was like, I'm gonna be the one to find out. Come hell or high water, like I'm gonna find out what's going on here. So it is kind of interesting to have those questions and not always have everything answered, but at the same time, to just cut it off. I was very angry. I wanted to know.
Please, I need to know the tea. But yeah, you need to watch the sequels.
Okay, I will find out. Well, find out.
Report back.
So yeah, Paul's fucked off. There's some big secret. Need to watch part two to find out, or maybe part three. I don't know. And Tony's agreed to stay. So Tony and Mac, they're in on everything now, and you know there's a bit of solidarity there. They're sitting in fields, they're getting deep. And they're gonna get set up for opening night. So it's the night before there's some weird fucking shit happening again, and Mac is in the depths of this hotel, and we find Paul, and he's just sitting there, like spaced out as fuck. And there doesn't seem to be like any marks on him or anything, and it's just like really odd, like a perplexing, like why is he just sat there like proper like sat up straight? How long has he been there? Like who knows? So they kind of like get him back upstairs and put him to his bed, where again he just lays there for hours and hours and hours, basically until showtime.
Yeah, I think it's the find him like in the Is it in the basement? Like, just sat with all them clowns. Like, they're all having a lovely little tea party. He doesn't say anything. No one knows where he's been. And then he goes back to the scene of the crime. Like, you could not get me in that bed if you paid us £1 million. Like,
No, but I
so
don't think we're dealing with Paul at this point,
no, I
really.
think Paul's
It's
checked
Paul's
out.
shell, but there's something else in the mind.
Yeah, and then it's opening night, baby.
So it's opening night. Alex is like absolutely buzzing at his tits for the massive queue outside. He's like, oh, look at all my hard work. Sam makes an appearance again as the hostess. And we start letting people in, and folk have like cameras, so they're like filming the whole thing. Which, don't know, obviously for the person to film, great, because we needed that inside footage. But if I was like, oh, I can't go until the next day because I've got work, and it was like plastered all over the internet. I guess it's the same with like concerts, like, you know,
Yeah.
with like the Beyoncé concert and Taylor Swift concerts last year, which were like the biggest things ever. If you had been avoiding everything just so you could enjoy those experiences for the first time, like, it's really fucking hard. Like, I didn't go to either of the concerts, but I know everything that happens at them. I
Yes.
know all the little bits that are gonna happen. And I've not even been. So yeah, I didn't know how I felt about that. I felt like it took the fun out of it a little bit. But for the purposes of the film, we're glad because we needed that footage inside. So like Mac and Sarah are kind of like hiding in various little bays so that they can like make sure things are happening. And then like all of a sudden you just see Joey like a fucking flash like running past, and you're just like, what the hell is happening? And it's the fact that we don't really have any clear footage from the basement either. Poor Melissa's screaming her head off like, this is not part of the show. And you know, the people there don't know what the fuck to think. And there's all these like ghoulies, demons, and whatnot, all dressed in black, just all of a sudden like cutting about. And it's just, I guess the whole point of the documentary was like, what the fuck happened? And it's like you still don't know really, do you?
It's so chaotic. Like, from I think there's
That is the
they're
word, chaotic.
literally like they're kind of they've got all these little like alleys and things that they can like come in and out of, like just to make sure everything's running smoothly. You see Joey run past, someone's like, was that meant to happen? And you're like, I don't know, what was it meant to happen? Like, what's happening? And then I think maybe Sarah at one point says, I'm sure I've just seen Paul walking around.
Yes.
And then it's like, you hear all this screaming, the video is still going. And like, I think what's really nice about this is it links back to the beginning where like now we've got a little bit more context about what's happening. And yeah, you just hear like all this screaming, like poor Melissa's like still chained to that pipe in our bra as well, like freezing cold, just vulnerable, exposed. And yeah, all these like hooded creatures and everyone's like running around trying to get out. Like you can feel the panic of it, of just everyone being like, okay, this is not okay. Like I think that at one point the person filming tries to get into the basement, like thinking, oh, this must be like the way out. And then everyone's like pushing back up, being like, don't fucking go down there. And you're just like, what on earth is happening? This is like, you do feel the panic of like everyone in that moment. Is it like the crew of it included.
It's like the bit on the stairs when they're all like squished, and you just know the danger in that from like things that have happened in the past, like big fires, and the stairs have not been adequate to get people out, and then people end up dying and getting crushed and all these other things. And it's so scary. And it's like I felt heart sorry for Melissa as well because she's just stuck there. Like, even if it is just like a gas leak, a fire, whatever, because Joey's took off with the key. Because he had the key to let her out. And yeah, so she's stuck there, come hell or high water. And yeah, it's like the panic, it's the chaos. You're watching it, and there's no way to turn this around, really. Because there's no, because it's just a hotel. It's not like a big open space where all these people are in here, and there's no way to get all of these panicked people out quickly because you're bottlenecked somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can see, even if it's not demons, even if it was like something like more of the natural world, that this is not gonna like end well. There's gonna be some injuries, there's gonna be some fatalities even. And then yeah, after all of this, like they're attacked by all these like supernatural things. It's like 15 people, and I don't know if that's including the Hill House team, but 15 people are killed. So you can see why there
I
was
think
so
it
much
is. I think,
interest.
yeah. I think it is. I think that 15 includes them, I think. I think what's really scary about it as well is that it happened so quickly. Like, you know, you might be like, oh, Andrew Tully and his little side men are like, we'll give them like an hour just so their hard work can pay off. But no, it's like, get them people through the door and shit's kicking off.
Yeah, because there's like a news interview from someone who was like towards the back of the queue being like, I didn't even get in yet. And everyone was coming out and there was screaming and, you know, people dying. And yeah, it's the fact that it happens so quickly. And yeah, I don't know if you've ever done any like fire training, but they always use like football stadiums and stuff as examples of like how quickly stuff can like go up in flames and how quickly something can become a disaster. And I think that is like the scary thing here. Like, even if it wasn't supernatural thing, it's like everything turned to shit so fucking quickly. But you'd think, like, I don't even know how many people were in there for it to be, seem so crowded, so panicked, so like everything. But yeah, I don't know how much blame can be put on the Hill House team and how much can go on the demons, you know?
Like the demons are fucking up our fire code.
Exactly.
I think, like, as well, like, obviously, that's a really fucking old building. Like, I think what this film does really well, like, with the kind of the with them living there, them filming, but then the documentary stuff as well, you get such a good idea about what the setup of the hotel is, like, all of them kind of corridors into different rooms, things like that. Like, it all seems quite kind of like a little zippy kind of thing where it's like we're all kind of in this one little space, all the rooms are quite small, like there's no kind of big expansive bit of room where everyone could have spread out, and like it feels like, you know, it was just a disaster waiting to happen where like everything is just kind of so funneled in, because they've clearly had this path of like you come in the front, you have a look around here, you go down this corridor, you come through the bar area, you end up in the basement and out. There's no kind of room for error there. So shit pops off, people are going to get hurt.
Yeah, like, because that's the thing, they've turned this together so fucking quickly. And I don't know what it's like in the States, but I feel like over here you would have to have like health and safety for certificates that probably would have taken ages to get, and you know, making sure that the electrics and the gas and stuff were safe. To have people inside and all these other things, I feel like it would have taken a year to set up, not like a couple of months. So yeah, you can see that like Alex's kind of determination for this to go well. He probably just saw that this property was cheap, because I'm assuming that he's bought it and not rented it.
If it's
And it,
abandoned, yeah.
yeah, and he's just been like, I'm going to make so much money off of this, and not really thought about like the health and safety concerns of it all. Because there is like major health and safety, you know, demonic portal aside, there's major health and safety violations going on in here.
This wasn't written down in your report. There wasn't anything about a portal. What are you talking about?
So at this point, you know, Sarah's still being interviewed by Diane, and she's like, can I have a wee break, please? And Diane's like, yeah. And Sarah tells her that she's going to be in room 2C, if the team has any questions for her. So She's getting demiked, and she says something like, "Have you been to the Abaddon? Abaddon? Why do I keep saying that? Have you been to the Abaddon?" And Diane's like, "Oh, I can't get a permit to get in." And Sarah's like, "You're gonna let a little bit of paper stop you?" And it very much kind of encourages Diane to like break in because it's all boarded up and stuff as well. So Diane has a word with her camera guy and she's like, fuck it, let's go. So they go to the hotel reception and Diane says to the woman at the reception, like, "Can you let Sarah Havel and Tusi know that like I'm away but I'll be back in a couple hours?" And the woman's like, "There's nobody here with that name." Diane does not think this is weird. She's just like, "Okay," and goes. So Diane and the cameraman make it to the Abaddon and they break in and start having a wee nosy around. And there's so much blood everywhere, which is the first like disconcerting thing. Diane's loving this. Like she's so Gail Weathers coded. Like Gail Weathers would love this shit as well. And the cameraman is just like really freaking out. And like you were saying before, like this place just like tunnels in. So they're going in. I have very poor sense of direction. So the whole way through this film, I've been getting so lost in this hotel because it just feels like room and room and room and corridor and corridor. And like I could would never be able to navigate my way through this. So they're like having a nosy through, and then they eventually come to this room labeled 2C. And Diane's loving this. She's like, "Sarah said you'd be in 2C." So they go in. It's locked from the outside as well. So she unlocks it, goes in, and there's a, like a woman sitting there. And she's like, "Sarah?" And then Sarah turns around and she's like got all these like marks on her face. And it turns out like Mitchell, like the person who was archiving the footage, there was still some of it to go. And it turns out that Sarah actually died at the Abaddon Hotel. She was like beat to death by like a possessed Paul who then slit his own throat and died himself. So the person that they've been talking to has actually been dead the whole time. And there were no Hell House LLC team survivors of the disaster. So like that's a lot at
That's
the
a lot, Robin.
That's a lot. So what do you think of this like twist that like Sarah's actually been dead the whole time?
Oh my God. The first time I watched this, you know the twist music from Saw, like at the end? Like that basically should have started playing because I was like, like, because I think when it ends, obviously, like it ends with like Sarah and I can't remember if it is it's Mac. They all go up the attic, like, and Alex is hanging from the ceiling. Everyone jumps this, and you're like, how the fuck did Sarah get out of that? But like, I'm pleased she has. Like, she's been this like really kind of consistent narrator the whole time. Like, she looks like she's literally been through hell. Like, she does not look like the woman in that video. Like, she does not look well at all. But you're just like, okay, like, yeah, like if I've kind of spoken about all that, I've never told anyone before. I'll probably want to have a little lie down afterwards as well. Like, I'll probably want a little bit of a nap. And then, yeah, you get there and it's like, to say, oh, to why is Diane being really like normal about it? Like, you wouldn't be like shitting yourself being like, okay. But yeah, and then, yeah, Sarah turns around and half her face is gone and you're just like, what? It was crazy.
Yeah, it was wild. I still don't know how, like 100% how I feel about it. Like, if it's a good twist, if it's not, like, how was she there? Like, being interviewed by Diane. Like, I don't understand. I think I would have preferred it if she'd maybe lived and been this like pariah for 5 years. Because obviously like she's the only person who's lived to set it all up. And but then again, if she was alive, she probably would have been arrested and put in jail for putting that on. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
15 people can't die at your company's hands, and like nobody have any repercussions for it. So, although it does happen, doesn't it? So yeah, and I still don't know how I feel about it. But yeah, that's the end of the film. We know now that there's two sequels and a prequel. Do you think this ending is like sequel baity? Like, did you finish this and think, yeah, I want more? Like, how
I
do you
mean,
feel about the franchise?
I wanted more just because I enjoyed myself so much, but I don't think it's a very like sequel baity
No.
ending. Like, I think if you didn't know there was more, I don't think you would be like, okay, where's, I need to immediately put the next one on now. I think they, I think it maybe is one of them where they weren't expecting it to be as like well received as it was, so they're like, shit. But I mean, at some point, they must have known they were making one, because why make it so vague with like Alex and all them about like his motives, what happens? But yeah, I mean, when I like went back onto Shudder and seeing that there was like, I think there was all three of them at the time were on there, I was like, yes. Yeah, I don't think it was set up to be like sequel baity in any way.
Yeah, I don't get a sequel bait from it, but I'm just reading a quote from Cognetti here where he has stated that he sees LLC as a trilogy, but as like one movie divided into three acts, and each movie is its own act. So it makes me even more curious as to like what two and three are actually about and how it's gonna, like, where it's gonna take the story. And he said he found two and three easy to write because he knew where he wanted to go with them from the get-go. So maybe he did have a trilogy in mind. And you know, he was very lucky it got picked up by Shudder. And it's like all of them are still available to view on Shudder to this date. So yeah, good for him. Have you got anything else you want to say about Hell House LLC before we get into, I was going to say box office and ratings. I don't have any box office info, so it's just ratings.
No, I think this is, it's become like a big comfort film for me, which is weird, like when you consider like how jump scary it is. But I think it is, it's like sort of similar with like Halloween H2O. Like that was the very first like Halloween film I ever watched, and that was like, it frightened me so badly. And I think, you know, you would probably hear like people think like, oh, Halloween H2O, like that's not the original Halloween, it's not Michael, but it was my introduction to Michael Myers, and that has become a very strong like comfort film for me. Like I will put it on all the time. And I think it's just that thing of like, it created such a visceral reaction that I'm kind of still chasing that high a little bit. But yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
So in terms of ratings, this film got a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb. It's got a 75% from Rotten Tomatoes critics and a 72% from the audience. And it's got a 3.1 on Letterboxd. I don't care about what they think, I care about what you think, Sophie. So what would you rate Hell House LLC out of 10?
I mean, this is not going to shock anyone. It's a 10 out of 10 for me. You know, I will talk the hind legs off anyone who even asks us about this film. Like this episode, it could have been 5 hours long, just me kind of chatting shit about it. I just think it's great to watch on your own. It's so fun to watch as a group. Like just to kind of see like how everyone reacts to it, like the jump scares. I think they're genuinely like creative jump scares as well. Like it isn't just like, you know, the music kicks in and you know something's gonna happen. Like you can feel that scare being set up. Like for me, it's like it's creative. Like the way that like the whole film kind of comes together from like that bit at the beginning, how it loops back in at the end. It works for me. Like there's a lot of stuff that probably, you know, that I think the story, the filling out of the information, like that could be better. But I know I'm always going to have a good time when I watch it. Like, I have no critical thinking when it comes to this film, other than like I just have a really fucking good time. So yeah, for me it's a 10.
I'm gonna give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's such a good film. Like, I was really pleasantly surprised watching it. I know there was like a lot of good reviews and stuff for it, but I think with found footage you still have like you're still a bit like reserved about it. And like I said at the start, it doesn't really do anything new with found footage, but what it does, it's like it is exactly what you want from a found footage film. It gives you everything you need. It does what it does exceptionally well. So yeah, I would 100% like recommend anybody to watch this. It's so good. The jump scares are really good. And yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the franchise. Because I want to know the tea, so I need to watch the second and the third one now to find out what is the big secret, because I like to be in the know. I like the goss. So yeah, if you ever want to gossip about anyone, even if I don't know them, just send me a DM, I don't mind.
Oh yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
So that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much, Sophie, for coming back on. I've been so excited to have you back on as well.
Oh, thanks for having us on. Like, literally, when you messaged and were like, what do you want to talk about? I was like, Hell House. There's not even thinking about it. I was like, if you've not done it, get me on. It's been so much fun. And obviously, any excuse I've got to rewatch it, like, I'll take it. And
yeah,
I'm always happy to be your girlfriend.
Where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter at SophServesFace.
I am at HanceLindsay_ on all social media. You can find the podcast at GirlfriendPod on Twitter and Girlfriends_podcast on Instagram. I'll be back in a fortnight with Kat Hughes, who's been on a couple of times before, and we're going to talk about Starry Eyes. I've not seen it, but the premise sounds really good, so I'm looking forward to watching it and getting into it and chat to Kat again, because she's a lovely lady. Yeah, I wish I had, like I've said this to Kat before, I just wish I had her job. She reviews films for a living and she's so amazing at it, and I've been trying to be like a bit more like critical about films, like writing little Instagram descriptions and stuff, and I'm like, it comes so naturally to her. She'll find out like 20 reviews in a day and I'm like, oh, wish I could do that. She's amazing.
Oh. I'm shit at reviewing films, mate. Like, my Letterboxd average is like 4 or 5, because I'm just like, I had a good time. It's rare if it gets marked like anything like 1 or 2, because I'm just like, was I entertained for 2 hours? Yes. 5 out of 5.
I've given out so many 3s and I'm like, not everything can be the average. Like, so I need to either start giving things 2s or 4s, because I can't keep like being middle of the road all the time. It's pathetic, honestly. So on that stunning revelation, until next time, stay spooky.